look so comfortable. Like a cheerful sentinel.
Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. This week saw the release of Dimmer's fourth studio album, Degrees of Existence. It's significant not just because it's the fourth album in nearly 15 years, but also because, at least audibly, it marks a return to Dimmer's beginnings, and on early listening could well be the best album to date. I caught up with Dimmer frontman, former Straightjacket Fit singer and New Zealand music icon Shane Carter earlier this week for a chat.
Feeling sure and confident.
I don't want to sound too sycophantic, but Shane, Degrees of Existence, what a fantastic new album.
Cheers, bro, thank you.
It's about a year in the making, is that right?
For writing it and all that kind of stuff, yeah, I would have started writing it at the start of last year, so the making of it got kind of held up because Dino, our drummer, was in Wellington, so we sort of had to work around his schedule to a certain degree. Eventually got it finished. I only finished it about 3 weeks ago, actually, so...
Because, I mean, Dimmer's been around in various guises since I was trying to remember. I think I first saw you in about 95. Would that have been right?
Pretty much.
So some 14 years now. Four albums, you
know.
Scary,
yeah.
You take your time, don't you? I mean, you know...
Well, the first album took me years to get together, you know. Like, I started the Dimmer thing in 95, and I believe You Are a Star came out about 2001.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of blind alleys, and...
Actually has been reasonably consistent since that first one, I suppose, hasn't it? There's been,
The first one came out in 2001. I've done a soundtrack as well in that time, worked on another couple of records. So, yeah, I've been pretty busy since then, you know. So the output hasn't been too bad, but these things take time, you know.
Absolutely. You don't want to rush them. I did read somewhere, and this is pretty much what I thought as well. I mean, I know that you've said so far it's very hard for you to get a grip on what the album is now because, A, you've probably heard bits of it 1,000 times in the last year or so,
mm-hmm.
And then at the same time it's quite hard for you to get a hold of the whole, is that right?
Yeah, totally, yeah. It's just very hard to be objective about your own work, really, and I quite often find that I really don't know what the relative strengths or weaknesses of a record are until I maybe hear it about 3 years down the track, yeah.
Through the bedroom wall, you were saying.
Yeah, well, exactly, you know, like, I'll hear it somewhere, and like I was saying before, you know, like, the answer to that musical problem that I never solved while I was making it will become, you know, glaringly and really frustratingly apparent. It's like, dope!
Do you ever, when that happens to you, and you go, oh, we just needed to throw a little bridge in there, or we just needed that something, you know, different chord, do you ever go, can we just try that live from now on? Do you change a song live?
Yeah, that does happen, you know, and sometimes songs reach a point that you were actually, you wish you'd actually reached that point when you had recorded them, but, sometimes songs are never finished, and so they just keep mutating and all that kind of thing, you know. I kind of dig how someone like Bob Dylan will go out and just play, you know, a famous tune in a completely wildly different way, you know.
Yeah.
I can kind of respect that.
I think it was Leonard Cohen who had about, you know, 100 different verses for Hallelujah, and just every time he'd play it, he'd kind of make new ones up and add new ones, and the song could be completely, you know, lyrically completely different from how it was in the past.
Right, well, I also find that guy's career sort of comforting as well, because I know that man finds the songwriting process actually completely torturous and will spend 10 years on a lyric and all that kind of stuff.
Do you find it that hard as well?
Sometimes, yeah, definitely. It's hard work, man, you know, especially if you're conscientious about your work, you know, you don't want to do weak stuff. You know, lyric writing and all that kind of stuff, I've always been very conscientious about that. I don't want to do, you know, I've got to better sing the lyrics that I write and be able to commit to them.
Yeah. There's no sha-la-la-la-las on your album, are there?
Well, sometimes I've had sha-la-la-las and that kind of stuff, but even I like to imagine that the sha-la-la-las are actually evocative in their own way, you know, and can actually say more than, you know, like a worked-out line can. But, yeah, I have been always really conscientious about lyrics being good. Mm. And, you know, maybe to the outside listener they're obtuse or something, but to me... that always makes sense, you know.
See, I was going to say, this is one thing I remember from the Straightjacket Fits reform, you know, reunion tour, was how many, you know, we all knew all the songs, but how few lyrics we could actually distinguish through, you know, we all sort of knew the syllables, the right tones and sounds of these songs that we've been singing for years, but no idea what some of those lines
right.
are.
Hey,
so you just find yourself going, hands fell gone, yeah.
Hey, we're all like that, bro. But, you know, that's the beauty of rock music, you know, like or rock lyrics, you know, we all get them wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, our version of it is just as legitimate as anyone else's, so...
Very deep, very deep. Look, this album,
To me, this is what I was getting at before, it sounds like almost a return to the I Believe You're a Star sort of time of Dimmer. And I saw someone else said this as well, this kind of, you know, as soon as you hear it on, it sounds like you. You know, before you've even started singing, just the bass, the guitar, everything sounds like you. You know, the your second album had that kind of smooth, loungy kind of feel to it, stuff like that. Have you got any sense of that, of...
Yeah, definitely. You know, the second album was actually our most commercially successful record, and it's my least favourite out of all of them. And my favourite is, up to this point, is that first album. And what I liked about it was that, you know, to me, without tooting my own horn, it was a brave record, and it wasn't scared to try things. And I wanted to return to that with this record. I wanted to still have songs and deal, you know, with songs with choruses and bits you can sing along with, like sha-la-la-la. But at the same time, just to have an undercurrent or an extra dimension of experimentation, for want of a better word. You know, try weirder sounds. And I've never been into safe music, you know. And I'm not into friendly music or music that's desperate to be liked, you know. I don't think any strong art is desperate to be liked, you know. I really admire stuff. I admire films that are unafraid to go at their own pace and set their own tone, you know, and... to appreciate them, you've got to settle into that pace rather than, you know, the instant gratification of, you know, blockbuster candy floss.
I was thinking about this. I was reading how you'd been inducted into the Hall of Fame for Straight Jack Fitz last year, and thinking about at the time how you may not have felt that accepted by the music community. And I thought, where are the Holidaymakers now with their number one single? You know, when they were probably being bandied around, and you would have remembered that at the time, and probably head in your hands.
Yeah,
and now you're in the Hall of Fame. Now you're onto your fourth album with Dimmer. I mean, it must be some form of vindication.
To be quite honest, there is, bro. Yeah, and but I think that any good work is eventually got to be recognised. You know, and I went and saw that Jane Campion movie, the new one, the other day. What was it about? John Keats, the romantic poet. And he's a dude who died when he was 25, thinking that everyone hated what he did. And you know, there's been countless examples of artists like that who aren't appreciated in their time, and they've done work that is true and has got soul and is good work, and it may not have fitted in with the concepts of the time, but they are vindicated by time. And I think most good work is, you know, and you can see that in any number of cult artists who had rediscovered, you know, later on. And bro, I've been making music for long enough to have had a lot of fashions and styles and stuff to come and go, you know, around me. And so I'm glad that I have stuck to my guns and, you know, without being Mr. Noble, you know, tried to do stuff that's pure to me, you know, and feels right. And yeah,
this is one thing about the Straight Jacket Fitz reunion tour, is how contemporary a lot of music sounded still in its time. You know, you're playing it, I mean, they were familiar songs that were known for years, but could have stood up and could have been written last week in many ways.
Well, man, you know, Elvis Presley still sounds good, you know. Yeah. Louis Armstrong still sounds good. Miles Davis still sounds incredible, you know. And I'm not putting us on their level, but, you know, like, it goes back to what I was saying. If it's good, well, it's always going to be good, you know. It doesn't have to be tied to its time.
Because, I mean, you were making music in the, you know, in the 70s and 80s when some of... So music was going through such changes, such technological changes. I mean, you managed to resist using drums that went do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know.
Yes, and chorus guitars.
And chorus guitars and big synthesizers, and all those things.
We're always, I think it's coming from Dunedin as well, we're always very aware that if you jump on a bandwagon, well, the thing is, you're going to go over the cliff with that bandwagon, you know,
yeah,
when it ends. And I think that's the beauty of distance, you know. It gives you a filtering device, and you can still be aware of what's going on and still learn from it. And but you don't become a slavish imitator of it. And I think any artistic form is about finding your own voice, you know. But that Straitjackets thing, yeah, man. Look, we had no idea. We thought when we got together, we actually got together to play a friend's birthday party, and we had no idea. We thought our music could sound really lame and crusty and, you know, sad. And then we played it, and it was like, hey, the story really kicks ass, you know. Yeah. And that's why we did that tour, you know.
Yeah.
It was really great. For us, it was a feeling of vindication, because, you know, our last connection with that band was when we split up. And any band, when it splits up, so you've got a sort of sour taste in your mouth. And this certainly is, got rid of that.
Yeah, I mean, Dimmer, as you're saying, has been around now for 14 years, and for a little while there, you were in danger of becoming the next Martin Phillips by having an ever-changing lineup behind you. But the band's actually been pretty set for the last 3 years, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So this album, did this feel like Dimmer making an album as compared with Shane Carter dressed as Dimmer making an album involving some people he knew?
It certainly did, yeah. The whole idea, though, of Dimmer at the start, that was always the idea, was to have sort of be this umbrella thing, you know, because I was sick of being stuck to the one gang, you know. And so it was great to be able to bring in, you know, whoever I sort of wanted for each project. But, yeah, this band that recorded this record, we have been together for 2 or 3 years, and we've shared a lot of experiences too, you know. We've toured the world together.
Does it feel right now?
Feels great, you know, like any sort of band set up, you know, we love and care about each other as people, and that definitely comes through in your music as well, you know. And we've shared a lot of experiences, and my main thing with this band was that I thought the band had started to get this point where we were really good live, and probably more so than any of the previous Dimmer lineups, and that's something that I really wanted to capture on this record, yeah.
Well, if it ain't broke. Hey, we're going to finish off with a song now. Cold Water's the one that's currently ripping through the radio. Is that the one you want to play or for us? Or is it something
else? Yeah, sure, we can play that, yeah.
Okay, then tell us about Cold Water.
Cold Water is quite a snotty little tribute to sideline critics. Those who stand on the sidelines and tell you whatever you are doing is without offering any alternative of their own. And so I suppose the general theme is, put up or shut up. And what I actually really like about this tune is that Gary, our drummer, our current drummer, has done an incredible video for it, which is this 3D animation, which you can check out on our MySpace and Facebook websites. I just saw it for the first time the other day, and it blew my tiny little mind. And the thing is, the tune's about 5.5 minutes long, and so there was pressure to perhaps trim the song, you know, for radio and video formats, and I'm so glad we didn't, because the last minute is when it starts getting really gone. And I'd really highly recommend this video, because it's how would they describe it? A potent combination of song and imagery.
Good man, good man. Look, Degrees of Existence was released this Monday out through Warner Music, available in all good record stores. We're going to leave you with Cold Water. Shane Carter, the dark prince of New Zealand
that
rock
totally
and roll.
Totally miserable guy at Sandringham, yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Cheers, bro.
Yep, that's Cold Water off Dimmer's new album, Degrees of Existence. And that's all we've got time for tonight. Thank you very much for listening. If there's something you missed or you'd like to hear again, publicaddress.net/radio. I'm Damien Christie.
And I'm Russell Brown. Thank you. New Zealand on air.